This hour is brought to you by Alpine Credits. Do you own your home and need a loan? Alpine Credits can help. Visit alpinecredits.ca to learn more.
Hour 2 Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and up on TSN 4. Brian Hayes, O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jonas Siegel in here from The Athletic. Mark Feinsand from MLB Network later in the hour. The Jays are moving and shaking.
How about them Jays, man?
Moving and shaking.
I'm talking Jays fatigue right now of their offseason. I think it was 4 months ago we were talking with Scotty Mitch. Springer was in play. Who else was in play? Bauer was in play.
LeMahieu.
Lindor in a trade possibility. That was in play. And now some guy signed yesterday. I never heard of the guy, Hayes.
Yeah, Tyler Chatwood.
I never heard of Tyler Chatwood.
It's your classic Blue Jay praying for a bounce back on the cheap. Has some talent. He signed a big deal with the Cubs. It blew up. It was awful. His numbers are beyond inflated. He can't throw strikes. Like I can't sit here and convince you that this is going to work based on what he's done the last two or three years. But he's a guy that they liked a few years ago. They still think he's got talent. They're probably not paying him anything. And they're going to pray that somehow it all comes together, which is fine. I mean, you still have to work your offseason out. You sign different guys at different times. It's just the reaction, I think, from every Blue Jay fan is the next signing we hear about is Springer. You know, like it's got to be Springer or it's Bauer.
Well, fans
or
of all people, they're thinking big picture.
Come on
and
now, let's go.
Chatwick doesn't do it for them.
That's not going to move the needle.
Well, I actually think it works against them to have themselves linked to all these different guys. Because then it creates the expectation that you might actually get one.
Yeah, but
if they were just
not linked to anyone,
it would be
better.
When
the music stops, Jonas, and you don't have a chair, then what happens?
I know, but like, remember when the Raptors got Kawhi? We never heard anything about it.
That Kawhi situation, that trade scenario was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, a once-in-a-lifetime scenario, and Masai pulled it off. And
it just happened again with Harden. So it wasn't once. It's like a once-a-year in the NBA. No? Nothing?
Hayes, you got to intervene here. Hayes.
I'm letting it breathe. I'm just going to let it breathe. I was going to jump in, and I'm like, I got to let you two sort this out because the meeting of the minds is happening at some point. Owen Jonas over coffee, down game tape, and I don't want that to be spoiled.
Do you not think the opportunity to get Kawhi, an organizational talent that can put you over the top to help you win a championship, was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for the Raptors organization?
For the Raptors, it most certainly was. Yeah, it most certainly was. And as much as, you know, James Harden's talents are all-world, he's not Kawhi Leonard either. Like, if they acquired Harden for DeRozan 2 years ago, I don't believe the Raptors win a title. Like, Kawhi is on a different level, both ends of the court, his winning pedigree, his ability to elevate at the right times, where Harden just simply has not done that. But Harden's an all-time great player, too, you know, that did just get moved. So I think you're both probably accurate in this.
But the point was about the Jays. Like, I think it's actually been bad for them that they're linked to all these guys because then it creates expectation. If they just came out of nowhere and got Springer, people would be like, oh, wow.
Oh, I don't disagree with you. And it was Atkins and Shapiro who kind of missed. They're almost out of character with how open and honest they've been about their pursuit of big talent because, generally speaking, they've kept everything close to the vest. You know, this is not a front office in Toronto that is willing to tip their hand or has not historically been willing to tip their hand. Atkins has been on the record multiple times. Shapiro multiple times saying, we're going big game hunting. Like, we're going for the big boys, and we think we can add two big guys. If not, we'll add four very good guys. I think that's a direct quote from Mark Shapiro. Well, Tyler Chatwood doesn't cut it. You know, Robbie Ray doesn't cut it. If they get Kirby Yates, that's a good signing. Another guy whose arm blew up last year. But surgery, hopefully he's back, and if he performs the way he did a couple of years ago, that's a big boost to your bullpen. So if they lock in Yates, that's a good sign. But you got to get Springer, Realmuto, Bauer. You got to get one of them. Now, you know, because of what you just said, Jonas, like they've been open and honest in their pursuit of all these guys. If you miss on all of them, no one is going to accept that it's a blessing in disguise and actually we're being patient and really we're building towards 2022 because that's what will happen. You know, they'll get their message out through certain members of the media. Hey, peddle this. We weren't really all in here. We're just kicking tires because you're already hearing it. You're already hearing it. Well, they're really in on DJ LeMahieu. Yes, they were. They offered the contract to him, you know. And they weren't, you know, they didn't need Lindor. They were just sniffing around. No, they put a package together and they didn't get it. Like, you can't have it both ways. You're either in on the guy and you want him, and if you miss him, then you didn't get the job done, or you're not in on him, and that means you didn't even make the call. It's one or the other. There's no in between.
And what's the courtesy offer just to let your fan base know that you were sniffing?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, we made a pitch, but in actuality it was garbage, so you had no chance anyway.
Right. And all of this is a moot point if they lock in Springer. They just need one guy. You know, you sign George Springer, you bring in Kirby Yates, you bring in maybe another bullpen arm. That's a pretty good offseason. You know, they've already got some good young pieces here. They're a decent team to begin with, a growing team, a maturing team. You add a big bat and a big defensive presence in center field like Springer, you bring in a couple of bullpen options, boom. That's a good offseason. Didn't go by the timeline maybe we were hoping for, but who cares? They still don't play, you know, their first game for another 2.5 months. So it's all good if you get it done, but if you don't, there will be no explanation. Like, there's no talking your way out of it. It is an epic failure, if they don't get something done.
Do you think they're at all, like, is Bauer, that situation, just gone by them or what?
No, I don't think so.
They're interested, Jeff, I heard.
They're in on it.
Come on.
Until these guys sign, I mean, they have enough money. I think ownership has to step in here at some point and push it over the top. You know, I don't necessarily blame Shapiro and Atkins. It's not their money. You know, they can only go so far with what an option is.
You're saying like ridiculous offer, just like get him?
Not ridiculous necessarily, but let's say you really want Springer.
Yeah.
And let's say the Mets have a 5-year, $100 million deal on the table, just using that arbitrarily. And Shapiro and Atkins have been told, you have $100 million. Well, then that's all they can offer. But if the owner steps in and goes, make it $120 million, I want him, then it's $120 million. You know, and that's where I think it's on the owner to step in and say, gotta happen, guys. Call him back, offer him another $20 million. Let's get it done. Because Shapiro and Atkins can't just do that. It's not their money.
Any massive deal like that, it's ownership.
It's got to be the ownership's money.
Yeah, because if it was up to the GMs alone, it would be off the charts worse than it already is.
Exactly. It's video games at that point.
Yes.
Joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline, here is Ray Ferraro, TSN hockey analyst. What's happening, Ray?
Are we talking about your contract extension or what's up?
Yeah, exactly. I wish it was a video game. Hey, can I just punch in my own number here?
How
many different people have to look at that and say, I don't know. There's a lot of red tape when it comes
maybe
to my contract.
Maybe Jonas can come up with some stats, some analytics to show your worth to the station.
Actually, he's worth a lot. That. Thank you, Jonas.
Jonas, do not take that, Jonas.
Well, we're having this...
You saw what he was wearing yesterday. Do not take that.
I did. I'm not going to. We're trying to have a summit, Ray, Jeff and I, where we're gonna bring our different talents to the table and try to resolve some of our differences. Right, Jeff?
That's exactly right. What we're going to do, Ray, is I'm going to sit Jonas down and show him some videotape, a professional review, I call it, of an NHL game and point some things out that he has no understanding of.
Okay. And Jonas, your response would be?
Well, he said he wants me to then maybe show him some stats.
It's a meeting of the minds. Right, it's a meeting of the minds. It's Mo and Curly that are meeting, but it's a meeting of the minds. And it's
we're already doing it. We're masking up tomorrow morning. We're going to have a coffee. We're going to meet, and we're going to go through it.
It's just going to be an explosion of analysis. The two greatest minds in each individual field are coming together. It's going to change the game, right? It really is.
I think this is one of those things we're going to look back in 20 years and say, do you remember when?
I just can't wait for the time when Jeff just brings up expected goals on Overdrive.
Me too.
We're going to have to like mark that down.
I cannot wait.
Dude, I'm sorry. I just have to say this one thing, Jonas. Okay. You know that I actually like you.
I know.
But I'm expected to get on the Peloton tomorrow. But you know what?
You just shot it wide. You just missed.
I don't understand how there could be such a thing as expected goals. I don't know.
Well, we'll cover it in the summit.
Yeah, my cat's expected to cover up his litter every time he goes in there. But you know what? He misses a bunch. He doesn't do it. But he's expected to.
Yeah. Right, Ray?
I don't know.
You're on board with this summit, I'm sure.
This is really great. Now, I don't want to jump into the middle of the waters here, but there are a few numbers, Jonas, that get me turned a little bit sideways too. But I'll leave that to you and
me too.
You and O to get going.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, Jonas, what's the number that makes you a little bit wonky, where you're like, I'm not buying into that?
I don't. Do you want to do that on this show? Like,
just give me an example. Maybe Ray can chime in. Ray, you have a chime on Jonas's wonky numbers.
Well, Jeff, you know Team Corsi, right?
Yeah. You and Mark Masters.
Yeah. So Corsi, you know about Corsi, right? Possession.
You're talking to Ray, not me.
Oh,
so
I'm
you're
talking,
not a.
But
you're
Ray
not a
knows
fan
what
of
that is.
Corsi anymore? That's what you're saying, Jonas?
No,
you've
I think
you turned
it's,
your back on it. It's
I think
not deep
it's,
enough.
No, I think it's context. It needs context.
I see. Okay. Yeah, I can't
okay.
disagree with
well,
you there.
I'm going to jump. I'm not trying to support anyone in this argument, but I got to say the expected goal stuff for me, this is where I don't quite, either I don't understand it, and if I do, please correct me, but if I'm standing there at the peak of my career with a 20-foot wrist shot.
Yep. There are limitations.
And there's me and the goalie, and then with all due respect, somebody else is standing there 20 feet away.
Yeah, Darian Hatcher's there, Ray, and he wants to kill you. Darian Hatcher, kill you. That's like, what the stats don't predict.
But they can't predict also that I'm shooting it versus a guy that never scored.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so that's, like, I understand the generality of that stat, but that's where I'm like, the expected goals only matter if the right guy's shooting the puck.
That's the next layer, Ray, like that we haven't gotten in hockey yet. Hockey's behind.
Right, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, but no, that's incredibly important to point out because we've seen first-line superstars with a breakaway and we've seen a guy on the fourth line coming out of the box with a breakaway. And it's the same chance, mm-hmm. but it's not the same chance. It's not even close.
Well, and like a goalie, like a shot from the point is the same as a shot from the slot, but it's not the same kind of save.
Well, and you guys see that they're getting rid of the pucks now. I guess this just came out in the last hour that the pucks with the chips in them, there's been some issues. I had not heard of any players complaining about it, but clearly it had been happening behind the scenes that there have been players, I guess, complaining about inconsistencies so they can feel something. You know, I don't know what it could possibly be. I'm sure there'll be more details coming out. But this was a pretty revolutionary idea.
Sure.
For the league to have these chips in the puck just to get that much more access to data and, you know, how the game is flowing and where it's going. And they're already, I guess, having to make an adjustment. And I'm sure they'll circle back and figure it out down the road. But I credit them for this, too. Like, if the players don't like it, I think you got to pull the plug, you know, and tell you. I remember, like, about 15 years ago, the NBA changed the ball.
Right.
And the players immediately complained. They said, it's not the same. Like, we don't feel the same. We don't like it. And to credit the NBA, about a month in, they said, okay, we'll go back. Like, it's not – this isn't what we're looking for. This wasn't the purpose of this.
And that's not – even that is not insignificant because it's not like they had made seven basketballs. Right? Like, what do you do with all those basketballs that you can't use anymore? It's not like they made eight pucks with tracking material in it. And so, you know, so I did read that they're going to you know, they'll basically have to make another order. So whatever's not quite right, they got to keep digging away at it. But it's not that far away that it's going to be commonplace, and the numbers will be, I'm guessing, more readily available. But also, and Jonas, you can maybe speak to this, is like more easily understandable for the layman, like for those that just like us that just say just want to watch the game. I can watch a game and not want to get too deep into it. Like, I just want to watch it. But if I can understand the stuff a little easier, then, wow, that would be really great. That would be awesome. I'd be able to, maybe it helps enjoy or my enjoyment of the game. And that's, I think, where the next wave of this stuff has to be.
Well, and give us stats that actually, like, who cares how fast someone skates? Like, I don't know. What is that? Tell me something I'd like to know.
Is? Do you know how ridiculous that is? Because we were at the World Championships a couple of years ago and they had that stat. And about the third game in, Gord and I were talking about it and we're like, wait a minute, the fastest guy that period went, I don't know, 28.6 kilometers an hour. The second guy went 28.5 kilometers an hour. Like, you can't even, like, there's no difference. The slowest guy was going 26 kilometers an hour. Well, you know, like, I don't know. Maybe it's a number that you can look at and go, wow, that's really fast. I drive that fast in my car, and that's pretty cool. But I don't know how relevant it really is.
It feels like a combine stat to me,
yeah.
Which, again, can help in some areas but also be very dangerous in others. The NFL falls victim to it all the time.
The 40.
Guy shows up. Yeah, you don't even watch his game tape. You're like, wow, he can run a 40, and he bench pressed, and he jumps high in the air. You put on the game tape, the guy has got no IQ, can't play. You know, and you get caught up in the numbers.
Well, Brian, I forget the guy's name this past weekend. He just picked off a pass and ran it back 101 yards for a touchdown. Mm-hmm. Did you see his combine?
Oh, yeah.
They're showing him he got hit in the head. He was looking the wrong way. Like, he couldn't even get the drill right. Well, guess what? Who cares? They're like, oh, yeah, that's this guy's right. A good football player, even though he can't get through his drill.
Yep,
he screwed it up because he was nervous or whatever. And, yeah, he just scored a 101-yard interception return. I think that's the guy I want on my team. The numbers are important, but what I think is important to think about is, like, so there are sets of numbers that are detailed and deep and really intricate. But the ones I'm talking about are ones that, as a broadcaster, I could maybe use more so in a game if they actually were relevant and easily understood. Like, those are the ones I think the public wants. The ones that go deep and, like, that the teams use. Man, that's for the teams. I don't think that's ever going to be something that we look at and go, hey, that's really enjoyable in the game. As a broadcaster, I just want to make the game more enjoyable. And if I can fire in a couple of stats that make sense to everybody that they can get their heads around easily, then I think the game's better for it.
Well, like, Ray, if you could know Mitch Marner makes more passes that lead to quality chances than any other winger, you'd be like, oh, that's easy to understand. That would be great. That's not that hard.
Here's the thing. We had stats that last year we used through SportLogic, and we used them again this year. And we used them at the World Juniors. And I'll give you one example is like ozone possession. And it matters. If a guy's got the puck on his stick for 1 second in the offensive zone, nothing's really going to happen. So the U.S. was playing, and Trevor Zegras had the puck in the offensive zone 54 seconds, I think it was, in the first period. They dropped the puck at the start of the second. It was against Canada. The puck got cleared into the zone. It never left again. Zegras had the puck on his stick for another 16 seconds or something, or 14 seconds. He had it the whole shift, and then he scored. That was relevant because I can look at the number that he had just achieved, add it to the first, and go, man, that's the guy with the puck on his stick more times than anybody in the offensive zone tonight. Mm-hmm. And he just scored again. Like, I think that matters. That's something that can be fun to talk about. When I look at Austin Matthews in the last game, man, he had the puck everywhere. Mm-hmm. Everywhere. And you can quantify that, and people go, oh, you don't want them to go there and start scratching their head and go, gee, I think that's important. No, you want them to go, hey, that's pretty cool, and then watch the game. That's what I think it can be for.
Well, this all started talking about the Big Four and the way they performed over the past couple of games, where I don't think anyone's surprised that Matthews, who most would accept is a top 10 player in the league, maybe a top 5 player in the league, is playing like that. And Mitch Marner would be a layer below that, but not far below, and continues to play at a high impact, you know, and produce at a high impact based on his age and based on his capabilities. But we're talking about John Tavares and William Nylander. And, you know, if Matthews and Marner are going to drag and do their thing and continue to perform, if you get that secondary layer of scoring and production and fear that you can drive into the opposition, then you're really talking. I mean, that's the way this team is built. The 50% of their cap is in four guys, and Tavares has looked great, and Nylander's looked very good. And if they keep playing like that, all of a sudden you got two lines coming off of the board a lot, like 45 minutes of the game, you're facing one of those two lines. That's going to be very difficult to handle.
Brian, really, it's the only way that they're going to win. Mm-hmm. Just what you laid out. Like, let's face it, their whole team is built around, if one line's not rolling, the next line is. If they're both rolling, holy smokes, the other team is climbing uphill because they're just so good. But when they're not on, some of their other holes start to show. some of their, you know, some of the parts of the lineup that maybe you don't like so much, you go, oh, gee, those guys aren't really pulling the weight because we need the big boys to play. And so when I look at that and I look at the way that they've played over the last little bit, I'm like, man, that team's hard to handle. Like, who are you shutting down? Which guy? Which line? Then they're moving the lines around. You know, they might, you know, they might throw Matthews out and Tavares out together sometime, or, you know, they move people from, you know, Marner might jump out with the Tavares. Like, whatever it is, Sheldon Keefe has got options to keep the other team on their heels. And the more Toronto does that, the less we worry about their defense because they've got the puck all the time. And then they look really solid. Like, at one point last night, the shots were...
It was like 29-10 at one point, I think.
Yeah, but at 6 times, Jonas. And then I think the next 24 shots were like 20-4. And I was like, they just took the game over. Winnipeg just couldn't get to the puck. And when they got it, they couldn't make a play with it. And that to me was, that's what the Leafs are supposed to look like when they're playing well. Like, they just, their speed and skill smothered Winnipeg last night. They just couldn't handle it last night.
Well, and Ray, the debate between Jeff and I started with William Nylander. Jeff thinks I defend him too much. I don't think so. But let me ask you this. If William Nylander came to you and he said, like, Ray, what do I need to do to kind of take that next step? What would you tell him?
Play like you did a lot of last year.
What does that look like?
Into the inside of the ice. Drive from the outside. Don't settle for the outside shot. Get yourself on the inside of that defender when you attack, like the middle part of the ice when you attack. When there's pucks around the net, don't be hanging out 15, 20 feet away thinking you're open. What you are is not involved. Because he scored a lot of goals from close to the net last year.
Far more than I think
we gave him credit for.
Yep. And Ray, he was terrific last year. He was terrific in game one. But my point to Jonas, which he forgot rather quickly, was if he wants to take the next step and be regarded as one of those, like, just frontline top wingers in the game, which he kind of already is.
It's but like Pasternak is what you're saying.
Yes, like, it's just there's times where if it's a little bit, even just a little bit difficult, he just says no thanks. Yeah. And if you continue to do that time after time, it's noticeable. Even if you do have a great assist like he did with Tavares last night, it's like,
yeah,
you're only cheating yourself and you can help your... Imagine how dynamic, like, he would be involved, and you guys talked about the back pressure, how good he is at back pressure. Imagine how good he would be if the puck was in the corner and he just went and got it and ran somebody over. I know that's really not in his DNA, but imagine the turnovers he'd create in the offensive zone.
Well, when you bring up Pasternak, there's lots to love about his game, but I love the engine that Pasternak has.
Yeah. Like, and he's like, just better.
Oh, he's churning all the time. The legs are always going.
Drive train, Ray.
There it is. The drive train. We could hear that on NBC this week.
Yeah.
So I look at Pasternak. I think he's one of the very best players in the league. Yeah. And part of the reason is that he's never satisfied with staying out of the mix. He's always inside the mix. And when Nylander's at his very best, he's inside the mix. Like, he's in where it's tight and there's not a lot of room, and maybe your skills aren't what gets you there. It's your heart. When he did that last year, I was like, man, he's a completely different player. Mm-hmm. Like, he was, like, I'm not going to say unstoppable, but I'm like, who plays like that? Who's got that skill and that size and that skating ability and is scoring from in here too? There's not many guys that can do that.
No, he'd be on a short list for sure. Yesterday we talked about kind of the anxiety from coast to coast, and I can't imagine it's lowered at all in Vancouver and certainly not in Edmonton. I mean, I watched a good portion of both those games, and they just don't look, I mean, to put it bluntly, they don't look like complete teams. They look like they're lacking in all areas of the game. I don't know where I'd be panicking more if I was in Edmonton or in Vancouver right now.
Well, I mean, because of, you got McDavid and Draisaitl, it's always Edmonton, right? Like, we expect so much from them, and, you know, they've got an average defense, average, like, no better. In particular without Klefbom, who they, you know, they miss that size and his 25 minutes a night that he plays. And their goalie is average. Like, he's an average NHL goalie. And they don't have any other options. Right? Like, that's it. So I'd be worried in Edmonton. I thought Vancouver took a step back over the offseason in that their top six is pretty thin. And certainly without Miller, they were really thin. Now, Miller played last night, but, man, he's been in quarantine for 10 days. So it wasn't his best performance, nor will the next one be his best performance.
Ray, you know, let's not stir it up here, but how much more does McDavid look at this and go, this is year, what is this, Hayes, for him, year five or six?
I think it's six.
Yeah. I mean, he's got to be better too, though. Like, they
I know
get
that.
Their cookies on the but power
you
play.
Know,
I didn't know
Pierre-Luc Dubois
five
just
five.
Said no thanks in Columbus. So I think Connor McDavid has aspirations on being those guys. It's about championships. This is year six. Does he not have a timeline where he's like I can't see them being cup contenders this year or next, so when does it happen?
Well, I would say it's almost certain that he and Ken Holland have had this discussion. And part of the discussion is, okay, the roster is what we are, or we are what the roster tells us, but after this year, there's $22 million, I think, to come off the cap.
Oh, okay.
Like you can only make the changes, as we know, that you can make, right? Like, I love getting, you know, tweets and saying, oh, the Oilers got to get a new goalie. Okay, great. You got to get a new goalie. A, where are you getting them? And B, how are you fitting them in? Like, you don't have any cap room. So I do feel for McDavid because he is the best player in the game, and they're no closer to winning today than they were when he started. Mm-hmm. The problem is you're in the midst of that churn cycle again, right? Like, now a new GM's in there, and the new GM's got to get his people in there, and that's going to take some time, and he does have to be better. Like, the one game they won this year, he was by a mile the best player on the ice, and the second best player was Leon Draisaitl. So if I'm Dave Tippett, I'm really looking at, man, this is great to have balance, but right now I need to put Draisaitl and McDavid back together.
Oof. Like, I think that's like where it's going. I don't think you're wrong.
But then what's the rest of your lineup? Lines
how
two,
can it get worse, Jonas?
For your life.
Yeah, you got Nugent Hopkins as your second line center, who's a good player, but he's not Leon Draisaitl. My point is, instead, if the balance thing isn't working right now, even if it's for a short period of time, a couple of periods, a game and a game and a half, get them together. Those guys get sparked when they play together. Maybe they can help you turn around a little bit. Because look, it's four games. It's not 14, but you don't want it to turn into 14.
Well, they're in Toronto tomorrow and Toronto on Friday night. And if the Leafs play the way they did last night or on Saturday night, it's going to be a battle, for Edmonton for sure. We'll see what happens this time tomorrow. We'll probably know about the lines and the projection for the game tomorrow night. So we'll catch up in about 24 hours.
Doc Dan, much more athletic look today, by the way. I got to give you props on that.
Yeah, feeling it today.
I like it. You know,
gym guy. That looks like a physiotherapist right there. That's the guy who's been
feel
on the table.
Like,
and
I feel like Chubby from Teen Wolf with a 5XL on.
Just feed him in the paint and let him go to work for the boys. Set a screen for Teen Wolf, and it is.
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead, Ray. One more jab.
Oh.
All right. Okay, his phone dropped anyway. That's a good way to go out. There's Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Their showroom remains open by appointment only, or you can shop and buy online at MapleToyota.com to receive rates from 0%. Mark Feinsand from MLB Network on the Jays, the pursuit of Springer and others, where this offseason is going for them. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, so it sounds like this Jays signing is official. Kirby Yates is locked in a deal. We don't have the terms. We don't have all the details yet, but Ken Rosenthal reporting that. And our own Scott Mitchell was reporting earlier this morning that, Kirby Yates was in Dunedin, and it was more than just a kind of visit to see what's up. It looks like it was moving in this direction. So his numbers were
boom-worthy, Hazy? Boom-worthy?
It's an addition to the bullpen. His numbers were inflated last year. He was dealing with some injuries. He had surgery. But if he gets back to where he was a couple of years ago, it's a quality arm in the bullpen. It's what you're looking for. Here is MLB Insider from the MLB Network and MLB.com, Mark Feinsand. How you doing, Mark?
I'm good, fellas. How are you?
We're doing pretty well. Up here in Toronto, I'm sure you can understand this. We're a little bit jaded with the offseason because they've been linked to everyone in the league. Every free agent, every possible trade partner has been linked to the Blue Jays. And They've signed Kirby Yates, and you know, it's not a household name necessarily, but it's an addition. It's an arm. If he gets back to where he was a couple of years ago, I'd say this is a positive for Toronto.
Yeah, certainly not a household name in terms of the Springers and Real Mutos and LeMahieus that we've been hearing so much about with, you know, the Jays' interest. But, you know, last year, like you mentioned, injuries really were a problem for him last year. But 2018 and 2019, this guy arguably could have been the best reliever in baseball. You know, 2.14 ERA in 2018, 1.19 in 2019, led the league in saves, and, you know, good strikeout rates. He's a very good pitcher. You know, the one thing is he's 33 years old. He'll be 34 in March. So this is not a young reliever, but certainly a guy who's been around, found his stride sort of in his early 30s. And, you know, this isn't going to be the move that puts them over the top, but it's certainly a move that will help them as they move forward here.
Mark, the Springer tweets keep coming out, and I'm getting pessimistic about them because all the tweets say this. Springer has narrowed it down to Toronto and the Mets, and in my head, I know he's going to pick the Mets, and I don't know why I'm doing that. I don't know why I think that. I don't know if it's the Canada thing or the market New York, but I kind of have it in my head that he's not picking the Blue Jays. Can you convince me otherwise?
I think most people are thinking that because not of the Canada thing, but more of the Connecticut thing, as in that's where he's from, and that's obviously much closer to Citi Field than it is to the Rogers Center. That said, my gut tells me that wherever he's offered the most money is where he'll wind up going, because that's typically how these things work. Obviously, Steve Cohen has enough money to offer whatever he wants, but he's also a, you know, good businessman, and he knows that there's not an unlimited amount of money he's going to spend on the team. So, you know, would the Mets probably be viewed as favorites? Yeah, but I don't think it's an overwhelming favorite by any means. You know, Toronto's been pretty aggressive on Springer and just in general in this market. And, you know, I think players like to see that. They don't want to be – most players don't want to be the one asset, the one acquisition where they get there and all the eyes are on them and it's like, well, great, I have to do everything or else this team's not going to succeed. and the fact that the Blue Jays are trying to do as much as they are and they've got the good young core in place already and a couple of good pitchers, and, you know, it's not like it's an unappealing destination. I don't know how much – the 2021 situation of where are they going to play their home games. Will it be in Toronto? Will it be in Dunedin? I don't know how much that could factor into Springer or other big free agents' decision-making process, but, you know, I certainly think that they're a serious contender for him, whether they wind up getting him or not.
Well, we're chatting with Mark Feinstein from MLB Network, and you just hit on something I touched on earlier in the hour, a little bit indirectly, but when you talk about the Mets, you bring up their owner, and you bring up Steve Cohen, and everyone knows he's splashing money, and everyone knows they went out and acquired Lindor, and they're going to pay him, whatever that is, $300 million, $325, $350. They're going to pay him. And I said earlier in the hour, Mark, that I understand why Jays fans are targeting Shapiro and Atkins in terms of getting something done here, but ultimately they're working under the pay structure and the budget that the ownership supplies to them, and they have a lot of money available, you would assume, based on the nature of the business and the size of the business. I think it's on the owner to say, if you want Springer and he's going to take the top dollar, make sure it happens. You know, because Shapiro and Atkins, they can't spend money that isn't theirs. If they've been told you can spend $100 million on a player and that's all you got, and the Mets offer $110, they're going to lose. But if the owner steps up and goes, make it $120 and he's coming here, I think that's probably what has to play out here.
When it comes down to these big nine-figure contracts, it's always about the owner, right? I mean, as good as a general manager may be, if he doesn't have the green light from his ownership to go write the biggest check, then he's probably not going to get the player. And, you know, look no further than New York, where, you know, the Yankees have fallen short in their pursuit of some free agents in the past because Hal Steinbrenner has said, you know, our payroll's high enough and we're not going higher than X, and the player, to get a player, would have taken more. I mean, this year alone, you know, the Yankees have plenty of money. Hal Steinbrenner is worth a ton of money, but they're not getting aggressive in going after Trevor Bauer. They, you know, they might not even bring back Masahiro Tanaka because of the price tag. So, you know, at the end of the day, the owner has to be the one to greenlight a big acquisition of that nature. And, you know, the question is, Steve Cohen, his first year owning the team, big lifetime Met fan, et cetera. Does he want to come in and, you know, make these big splashes to win over the fan base and try to win right away? You know, today's news with the GM, would they maybe just go sign George Springer to try to put the attention elsewhere? I don't know. Anything's possible, I guess. But, you know, I think the guys who own and the companies and the women who own baseball teams own them because they've been very successful in life doing other things for the most part. And so because of that, they're not just going to keep open a blank checkbook. They're going to look at it from a business perspective and how is this going to help us on the field? How is it going to help the bottom line? And I think that's what it will come down to in terms of, you know, when you're looking at guys like Power and Springer.
With Mark Feinstein, and you mentioned the story out of New York. Jared Porter had been the GM. He was fired this morning via Twitter, basically, from Steve Cohen. And the story broke last night, courtesy of ESPN, that he was harassing a woman, sending 62 unanswered texts in a row and lewd pictures. And it was an absolute must. He had to go. You've been covering baseball for a long time, and I guess, as a result, the sports world for a long time. I'm not sure this would have happened on the same timeline 2 or 3 years ago, certainly not 10, 15, 20 years ago. I think that should be noted. I mean, the details are crazy, and they're it's insane what this guy was doing, and it was harassment. But the fact that the Mets pounced this quickly, I think, is a good sign of where we're going with the sports world and in baseball in particular, Mark.
I don't think there was a choice. I mean, the fact that ESPN had the text messages. You could see what they were. You had all of the gory details of, you know, the number of texts he sent and, you know, the fact that they were unreturned and he just kept going with them. And then obviously some of the photos. There was no other ending to this story other than Jared Porter getting fired. I think it might have happened if this was just a random woman he was doing these texts with. But the fact that it was a media member in a position of, you know, a baseball executive who has the ability to you know, hold some business power over that person, there was no way that this story was going to end anyway other than him being fired, because how could he possibly deal with, you know, media members in New York with this sort of history on his ledger? So, yeah, it's a good sign, and I don't know what would have happened 2 or 3 years ago or 10 years ago. Certainly 15 or 20 years ago, there, you know, text messages weren't what they are now, and social media wasn't what it is now, and there may have been a way to try to keep it quiet. I don't know. But, you know, thankfully we're in an era where there's accountability for these actions. And, you know, I mean, obviously there were a lot of women outraged on Twitter today, but there were just as many men outraged on Twitter. This is not, you know, not a way to behave and not a way to act for anybody, but certainly somebody in his position. And I think, you know, this was a foregone conclusion from the minute this story dropped last night. That it was going to end with him no longer being the GM of the Mets.
Well, Mark, Steve Cohen kind of feels like the exception as a new owner willing to spend. But to bring it back to free agency, how much do you think the lack of attendance this year is affecting ownership decisions? Like, I'm thinking of the people who own the Jays. If I'm looking ahead to this season and there's not going to be fans, like, maybe that impacts what I'm going to do in free agency.
I think it has to. I mean, when teams don't know what their revenue stream is going to look like, that's going to impact how much money they're willing to spend on players. And I can tell you this, having spoken to a number of executives from a number of clubs, we're sitting here on January 19th, and I can tell you that there are still teams out there that don't fully know what their payroll is going to be when the season starts. And that's because it's such a fluid situation with, you know, whether they're going to be allowed to have fans in the ballpark, how many fans are they going to be allowed to have in the ballpark. You know, still to some extent, how many games are they going to be playing? Is it going to be 162? Is it going to be 140? Is it going to be, you know, there's so many uncertainties surrounding the 2021 season that teams are just sort of sitting there and waiting. And I think the reason we've seen the free agent market moving as slowly as we have is that a lot of GMs, a lot of executives just don't know what they have to spend yet. Their owners are sort of saying, well, you know, once I figure out what our revenues could look like, then I'll figure out how much you can spend. But until then, this could be a slow process. So until we get some of those answers as to what 2021 is going to look like in ballparks, I don't necessarily think this is going to change.
Yep, I think you're absolutely on point with that, and we'll see. I mean, hopefully pitchers and catchers report in about a month and a half, and hopefully guys are signed and we move on with our lives, but that's not what we've become accustomed to in the last year with the way this world operates right now. Great stuff as always, Mark. Really appreciate it. We'll do it again down the road.
You got it, guys, in a time.
There's Mark Feinsand from MLB Network and MLB.com. So, yeah, the Jays, you know, Kirby Yates, it's a good signing based on what he did a couple of years ago in San Diego. And if he gets his arm back, he bolsters the bullpen, that's a good start. You know, make some hay and go out there and grab one more big name. And all is good here with the Blue Jays. But as Mark just said, and we brought up multiple times, I think it's on ownership to go over the top rope here. You know, Shapiro and Atkins are working within a budget. The budget can be changed by one person or one boardroom. And it's if
the mandate, Hayes, was get Bauer or Springer, I want one of them. Are you getting Bauer, obviously?
I'm not sure I would. Like, Springer plays every day. You know, like,
dude, starting pitching is what it's all about, though.
I can't disagree with you there. I just worry about Bauer a little bit. Like, Springer's 31, but I think he's going to be consistently good for a number three or four, you know, three or four more years. Like, Bauer, I don't know if he holds up. I don't know if, and so Bauer, I think, is going to cost even more money.
Springer's 31. How old were Tulo, and obviously they had some injury issues, Tulo and Josh Donaldson when they were on their way out of here?
33, 34. Yeah, not much beyond that. I hear you.
It's like they're dying to get Springer at 31, but those other guys, and they had the analytics on it, like Jonas Nylander here.
They WRC had it when the, plus. Have you heard of that?
Oh, yeah.
What?
Nice. WRC plus.
Very, very quality underlying stat, just to let you know exactly the value of every single player.
Yep.
And exactly how everything's going to play out. Yeah, I don't know. Tulo was a little bit older, as Grappler points out. And Tulo just broke down.
But,
like, Tulo, remember, he showed up and
Tulo
had no
couldn't
heels.
Even walk. Yeah, he couldn't walk.
That wasn't the Jays pushing him out. That was him. He couldn't play.
But do you guys remember in the NBA offseason when Charlotte signed Gordon Hayward? And people thought it was just like an insane contract. But they got him. Like, and they're like a team that's not going to get free agents. So the only way to get him.
The first game with Charlotte.
Yeah, he's always hurt. But, like...
That with Josh Anderson last night. He left the game early for Montreal. I'm like, here we go. This guy has had so many injury problems, and he returned and he was fine. But
they paid him too.
Paid him a fortune.
Yeah,
a fortune. Yeah. Well, Brent Burns will join us in about an hour. We haven't caught up with him, I don't think, ever on this show.
Dude, this guy lives. We got to ask him about it. He lives on a zoo. Like, his house is a zoo. Mm-hmm. He bought a ranch in Texas, and it's a zoo.
Yeah, like, he's got. Exotic animals.
Yeah,
everywhere.
Rhinos and stuff.
Yes, like snakes and alligators, I think, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, so we'll catch up with Brent in about an hour. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050N on TSN 4. All right, we'll get back into the Leaf game last night. The Raptors win last night as well. The Raptors with two in a row against Miami, you know, tomorrow night and Friday night, I believe it is. And the Leafs have Edmonton coming up two in a row. So it's just one of those years where the Leafs and the Raptors can both play at home on the same night, and they're going to play teams. Well, I mean, you play Miami a few times a year, but never back-to-back at home. And the Leafs play Edmonton once at the ACC a year, once at Scotiabank a year. They're going to play twice over the course of three nights at Scotiabank. So the scheduling is definitely unique. It's a little bit different, but it's been a fun ride so far. And Leafs are 3-1. The Raptors are up to 5-8, and they're in pursuit of a playoff spot right now, because you look at the teams that are in there: the Knicks, Cleveland, Charlotte. Like, these are not, you know, Atlanta is off to a decent start. These are not teams that really scare you.
I thought the Knicks were for real this year, Hazy B.
No, they're not. They're not. They might hover around 500. They might. Like, they might stay in the race, but you're seeing the separation, right? Like, Milwaukee, Brooklyn, Philly, Boston. Those are your top four teams. I think Indiana will be in there around the five spot. And then the Raptors were supposed to be right there with the 4, 5, 6 seed. Maybe they get a little bit higher if they perform well. Didn't happen for them. I'm not sure that pursuit is still realistic.
Yeah, and I don't want to be a downer, Hayes, but that you just mentioned those teams. That's where the division's at. It's the haves and the have-nots. And you can go ahead and provide interest to your fan base and go ahead and just get in, but you're going to get dummied by one of those teams. So have fun doing that. That's just the nature of it.
That may be the truth, but I'll guarantee you none of those teams want to see the Toronto Raptors.
You think, Jonas, anybody's afraid of the Raptors now in the first round? Who?
Yeah.
Who?
All those teams. They're
Give your head a shake, bro.
Jeff, look what happened last year in the playoffs against Boston. They took Boston to 7 with Pascal not himself. They almost won that game. They almost won that series.
Okay. I'm with Jonas on this.
Like, if the team is different, but I don't know. I wouldn't want to play them.
If you can play Toronto or Charlotte, who are you picking?
Toronto or the Knicks? These guys just won their fifth game of the season, and now all of a sudden they're
scaring. It's not based on what we've seen right now. It's based on their history, man. Okay. You know this. You play at some point, you would have played a team that was really good for a long time, and then you caught them on the down slope. You're probably like, really, this is who we get? Like, we get this team? You know, like, it's not that they're guaranteed to win. It's not that they'd be favored. I mean, they got to put themselves in that position. But they want to – we know their history. They've been in the playoffs for 6 years straight. Mm-hmm. They won a title 2 years ago. If it's the Raptors or the Knicks, no one on earth is picking the Raptors to play.
Yeah. My point is, I just don't think the Raps are scaring anybody.
I don't
right
think
now.
They are either.
Brian and Jonas Nylander.
I don't I'm not saying they scare. I'm
the
saying their history.
Nylander family is getting big.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Jeffrey O'Siegel. The two of you are just going to mesh together, and this is going to be a beautiful thing. All right,
we'll go to break, but we'll come back with more of Brian and Jonas Nylander. Stay tuned.
Alpine Credits.
Yes, it's your English teacher, Mrs. Nelson.
Uh-oh.
You've been using the word approved quite a lot lately.
True, but...
You know there are alternatives like accepted, authorized, confirmed, validated. Let's try. I own my home and would like a loan.
Acceptedated.
Alpine Credits, where homeowners get endorsed, confirmed, permitted, allowed, okayed, and approved. Some conditions apply. Alpine Credits.
FSRA License 12616.
This hour was brought to you by Alpine Credits. Do you own your home and need a loan? Alpine Credits can help. Visit alpinecredits.ca to learn more.